Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Right now, to the grain. If your team have ever been involved in a relegation battle, and in Scotland there are only two teams who've never been relegated, one of which is the mighty Dandies, Aberdeen, you'll know all about the emotional rollercoaster that it can cause. If your team survived, you'll also know all about the sheer, pulsating exhilaration. Matt Letizia is fascinating on battling for survival at Southampton, plus the burden of responsibility that he felt on his shoulders while trying to keep the club in the top flight. Matt explains why Glenn Hoddle was the only manager he swore at during his career, and listen closely for reflections on Ronnie Eklund, the lost genius of European football, Maurizio Pochettino, plus Gareth Bale. He's good on those. Really interesting. This episode was made possible by Nordoff Robbins. We spoke to Matt before Nordoff Robbins' annual football fundraising dinner in London at Grosvenor House, and their charity work is something we'd like you to consider. Nordoff Robbins works hard and brilliantly to deliver music therapy which changes the lives of vulnerable children and adults across the UK. The big interview's free. We told you we would try and keep it free. But if you've enjoyed this interview with Matt and you think it's worth a pound or more, then please go to www.nordoff-robbins.org.uk and donate. We'd thank you for it, and I think you'd feel proud. Laters. Then, again, let me go on my curiosity. Aberdeen's my club, passionate about them. I was lucky enough to be at Pittodrie when, you know, we were winning trophies with Eddie Turnbull and Ali McLeod, and then Billy McNeil was a classy man. This fella from St Mirren came along, Ferguson. We took on Glasgow, we won the league, we took on Europe, we beat Bayern Munich, we beat Real Madrid, and it changed my life. I'm not going to bore people who have listened to this before, but it changed my belief about what was possible in life, what you could achieve, what ambition was about, risks you might take.
Leicester fans are exactly the same thing as what you're
saying. Must be feeling the same now. My God, I didn't realise that if you act like that and think like that and work, blah, blah. If there was one time that even came close to equaling that feeling of taking on the big boys and winning trophies, it was the one season that we flirted with, really flirted with relegation. And the adrenaline and the sense of that very British us against the odds. And what was I doing? I was watching. But it was very seductive. And then when we got away with it, the feeling of glory, which I've never heard anybody else talk about until I was reading what you said about life at Southampton. And I think maybe the first one where you save yourself and you go and sit in the bus on your own.
That was
said in the book.
93, 94, we drew 3-3 at West Ham.
You felt like winning a cup. I could have more of this. These are odd sensations.
That was an odd sensation. I think the thing about that season is kind of we'd been written off as gone. I mean, I never used to really kind of look at relegation odds back then, but I'd imagine we got beaten over Easter by Oldham and Man City, both at home. Both were rivals for relegation, and after that Easter weekend it was kind of like you're gone, you're shot, and we were probably 1-8 shots to go down at that point. And then we went to Norwich and we won the magnificent game 5-4. At the time it was the first time, but I think somebody's done it since. I think it was the first time that a team had ever been behind 3 times in a football match and came back and won. And we scored the winner. Ken Moncow scored a header in the last minute of the game to win the game. And I remember after that game being interviewed on the pitch, and the guy said, this is after those 2 shocking defeats at home. And the guy interviewing me said, you know, how important was that? And I can remember stood there and saying, at the end of the season, I'm hoping that that goal just there is the one we look back on and go, that kept us up. And it was. We stayed up by a point, I think it was, that season. But that belief from coming back 3 times in the game I think, just reinvigorated everybody that we could actually stay up that season. And that was kind of that was a nice feeling, that 5-4 game. But getting to that last game of the season at West Ham, we drew 3-3, and I scored a penalty and a free kick that day, and I set up the other goal for Neil Maddison. And when the final whistle went and we'd stayed up, it was just such a relief that kind of everyone was kind of really joyous in the change room afterwards. And it did feel like we'd won something. But I can remember I was so drained for giving everything that I'd had in that last bit of the season to kind of make sure we stayed up, that while everybody was kind of celebrating, I kind of just slipped out the change room, and I was the first one on the bus and just sat at the back of the bus. And it was just a really strange feeling of satisfaction that kind of we were dead and buried, but we'd done it, and I'd played a big part in doing that.
You remind me a little bit of one of the things that was quite special about David Beckham throughout his career. It was eerie. The more you put him down, the more adversity there was, the more he would tend to produce.
Mm. Oh, I remember I was sat watching that game against Greece at Old Trafford, and I'll never forget it because it was the night of my testimonial dinner. Oh, it was the afternoon. I was having my testimonial dinner in that evening, and I'm sat in the afternoon watching this game, and I'm thinking, "Geez, we're not going to qualify here." And I've got my testimonial dinner. The atmosphere is going to be really shit at my testimonial dinner because all these England fans are going to come. Oh God! Yeah. But when he got that free kick in the last minute, I mean, I'd watch him take 5 or 6 free kicks before that, and he wasn't striking them particularly well. But when that free kick got given in the last minute, I was going, let him take it.
Yeah.
Let him take it. Don't take it off him, because he's had that many chances. He knows this is the last chance. He'll produce it. And when the ball went in, I kind of went mad, but I half expected it to go in.
I was off my sofa as a proud Scot. I must admit, I stripped off my grease kit. And that adversity, that being pushed down, that being put down.
Yeah, I mean, that we came back from the 98 World Cup stuff. With what happened to him there.
It was extraordinary, wasn't it?
Unbelievable how we turned that around.
You know, you're in a slightly dangerous zone now. Like, I ask, you know, I worked as a reporter when the England manager roundly lied, Glenn Hoddle, and then took the thing that he'd been asked about and sold it in his book. And over again, when I speak to players of talent who've worked, there's two things that come out when you speak to players that worked with him. If you were potentially as good as him, or if you were stepping in his golden sunshine, you'd probably be put down. And secondly, it's said over and over again, and I know you're a devotee of this, that he was very, very good as a coach.
Oh, absolutely.
Very good.
Yeah. Tactically, the best I've played under.
Given that we're talking about the joy and the success and the thrill of football as a life, how difficult it is when somebody you idolise turns out to be not just feet of clay, but steel toe cap, feet of clay as well.
Yeah, I kind of guess, I mean, looking back, that was kind of one of the more disappointing aspects of my career. I think having looked up to him as an absolute hero, as a kid, when I made my full debut for Southampton, it was against Spurs, he was on the pitch, it was kind of like, oh, brilliant. And then you kind of get to know him a little bit, and it's like, oh, not quite what I was expecting. And so, yeah, that was kind of one of the disappointing things, that we kind of never really got on, you know, especially as he was England manager. Left me out of the 98 World Cup squad after I scored the hat-trick in the B game. It was a bit sad. And then he turned up at Southampton as the manager about a year after he'd got sacked from England. And it was just a really strange atmosphere. He kind of didn't really, you know, didn't get to see eye to eye with him. He was just a different bloke than me, I guess, at the end of the day.
Again, without being mean, because we're talking about the psychology of sport and the power and the danger of that, frankly, does jealousy come into what you experienced under him?
It's difficult because you kind of try and find reasons why it was like that.
Yeah.
And it kind of, it doesn't seem to, I can't find any other reason other than that why he didn't really see eye to eye with me.
I don't think it's a, I mean, I'm not defending him, but I don't think it's a very unnatural thing in human life, because we're all full of frailties.
And
seeing somebody maybe stealing a bit of your thunder or listening too often to comparisons, I think does get at people.
Possibly, but, you know, I'd like to think as a human being that, yes, you can be compared to somebody, and somebody can have an opinion that perhaps he was better than you were, or, you know, he was on the same level as you were, very similar type players. I guess I'd look at it a little bit differently. I'd look at it as a compliment. Mm-hmm. To kind of, you know, I don't look at it and go, somebody's comparing me to Glenn Hoddle. Oh, I was way better than him. I look at it and go, wow, somebody's comparing me to somebody who was that good. Wow, I'll take that all day. But that's how I am.
I really liked your, I think at some stage, I can't remember when, you were at a golf tournament and you saw him sitting alone at a table and you just went up to, not make the peace, just say hi and kind of maybe smooth over the ashes. I really like that in life.
Yeah.
Was it just an instinct to...
I think it was... Well, obviously, I'd finished my football career. You know, there was no chance of him ever picking me again at any club.
Slight calculation in there. That's
no,
good.
It was just that, you know, there was this atmosphere kind of between us that it never really cleared the air from times at Southampton. He was the only manager in my career. I didn't fall out with my managers.
No.
At Southampton. I wasn't one of those players. If I wasn't in the team, do you know what? You're not picking me, that's fine. I'll go back in the reserves, I'll work, I'll get my form back, and I'll get back in the team. That's how it was.
Exemplary.
You know, even Ian Bramford, who kind of had completely the opposite idea of how football should be played than I did. I never fell out with him personally. The only manager I ever swore at in my entire career was Glenn Hoddle. And I just, at the end of my career, I just thought, you know, life's too short.
Brilliant.
And we were out in Dubai. It was in the hotel. We had breakfast. And I thought, he was sat there on his own. And I thought, no, I'm just going to go have a chat with him because I just wanted to get it off my chest. And I apologised to him because maybe I should have been a bit more respectful as a player towards my manager. But I just thought, life's too short. I went and apologised to him and kind of got it off my chest, really. And I thought, and we could kind of move on from there. And we have done, and we see each other occasionally now, and it's fine.
That's enough in life, actually.
Yeah. I mean, I'm still waiting for his apology, but, you know, I've done my bit. When he gets around to it, I'm sure it'll be fine.
When your head hits the pillow, you're not racked with guilt about not apologising to Glenn. We don't set out to be different on this podcast. I genuinely think that not just football, life could do with more attitudes like that. He'll tell you. I could learn from that. We'll let Richard Byers come in now. 94-5.
I know Richard.
Was Matt's best season. Part of that season, he was playing alongside Ronnie Eklund. If Ronnie had stayed fit and signed, would we have won something? It was the best football seen at Southampton, brackets, until recent years. And not just do I want to know your view on Ronnie. I was obsessed by Ronnie Eklund when I was a kid.
Oh, were you?
I had a friend who knew him and eventually met his representative somehow. And he was this player that I'd heard these massive stories about his talent and his individuality and whatever. And then because TV, as you said, wasn't as all-encompassing then, there was no internet, I didn't really see enough of him.
Mm.
And therefore, for many years, I cursed. I never saw this guy and his back injury.
Yeah.
So it's a good question from Richard. One, would you have won something?
Would we have won something? I mean, that would have been a big ask. We were in those. We finished 10th that season. Ronnie only played about 20 games or so for Southampton. But that season that we played, we got on brilliantly off the pitch as well as on it. But just had almost an instant telepathy on the football pitch. We knew what each other was thinking, and we knew where the ball was going to be going. We knew where to run. We knew where we could find each other. And that season for me was the most fun that I had on a football pitch playing alongside Ronnie. Obviously, you need kind of more than just a couple of guys to go and win a trophy. But, you know, for us, a 10th place finish at that point, and it was great timing that we did it because obviously we'd been struggling at the wrong end of the table for a few years, and that season was the season when four teams went down for the Premier League. It's almost as if we knew we'd got to pull our finger out here.
If you ever had to look lively, it was then.
we had a strong finish to that season and we climbed up.
But in telling us a bit more about him, for those who are young and don't know anything about him, what you're going to allow me to hear about one of my heroes, and you're going to talk about one of the most important men in your life.
Yeah, so that season kind of was just brilliant. We had one, and never get the way it came about. We were out in a pre-season in Holland, and Barcelona were at the same pre-season training camp. Johan Cruyff was manager at Barca at the time. Bally was manager of Raz. Them two were good friends, and they'd spoken over dinner. And Johan had said to Alan, you know, how's your squad looking? Do you need anything? What can I help you? And Bordy said, we could do with someone to play with Matt Letizia. We've got this lad who played, we could do with somebody who's on kind of. And you know, I looked at him and he said, I'll leave you a present in the morning. So we came down the next morning and Ronnie was just sat in reception on his own with his pair of boots and his bag. And Barcelona had buggered off and he'd been left there on his own to come and train with us. And from that very first training session, he was just like, oh, the lads were looking around going, jeez, this guy can't get in the Barcelona team. We're like, whoa. And he was just superb. His first touch was brilliant. His movement off the ball, he was so clever. A very brainy footballer. And that was just heaven for me to play alongside him.
You know, I think in the repetitive nature of people asking, and we have questions here, about choosing not to leave Southampton, one of the things that maybe makes people still curious is the fact that it might have been the case that had you chosen had they come in for you too, whether it was a Barcelona or Real Madrid or a Liverpool or a Manchester United or Spurs, it might have been that for four or five seasons you might have played with five or six Ronnie Eklund style players around you, because mm-hmm. that's what sometimes clubs with bigger budgets do groom and put together.
Yep.
So irrespective of the leaving or not leaving of Southampton or the trophies, or that must leave you with a sense of, if it's not regret, an itch that you haven't scratched, because you talked about the happiness of having somebody on the wavelength as you.
But that was great, and I was happy. But by the same token, I also loved the challenge of still keeping Southampton in the Premier League, even though we didn't have the best players. And I felt like if I left Southampton and the following season they got relegated...
Oh, my word.
I felt like that would be on my head. Yeah.
Wow.
That's how I felt about it.
That's an extraordinary responsibility to have carried around throughout your playing career.
And that's kind of one of the big reasons why I stayed. I loved it at Southampton. I love the area that I live in.
Yes.
Fantastic. The fans were always brilliant to me. But Southampton gave me my chance to be a professional footballer. And because of the way we were, and we were one of those teams that were kind of mostly fighting relegation throughout my career, I felt a responsibility to the city that we're not going to get relegated, especially when the talk of the new stadium was going on and a lot of the new stadium depended on us keeping our Premier League status. And so kind of when we moved to the new stadium, it was almost like a relief that we'd kind of got there. Mm-hmm. That's been done now. You know, the club are financially stable. We can get bigger crowds in to help us compete better. And so kind of my job was kind of done, really. And I was getting on a bit. I'd start to have quite a lot of injuries and the such like. So I only had the one season at St Mary's. So kind of when we got relegated three seasons later and then went into administration, it was just like, during those periods of time, it was like somebody had like stuck a knife in me, because I can just remember thinking, I've just grafted me nuts off for years and years to put the club in that position, and now in the space of 3 years it's all gone to ratchet. We're in administration now, we're playing in League One, you know. And it was like, geez.
And that period also, once you'd given everything and made certain choices as a man, not just as a footballer, if I'm not wrong, it must have felt to you that the decline was racked with stupidity.
Yes.
And that it was a limp surrender.
It was gross stupidity. I was co-commentating on the game at St Mary's against Manchester United when we last day of the season when we got relegated officially. And having played in so many games on the last day of a season where we needed something to stay up, I couldn't believe what I witnessed that day from those professional footballers. Because that wouldn't have happened in our day. And I know it's old players going, well, that wasn't like that in my day.
No, I don't think that's what we're listening to.
But I didn't see any fight in that team to stay up and any pride in their football club to try and keep that team in the division on that day. And that hurt me.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot,
we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
That emphasises how unusual. You probably didn't view what your choices as noble. I think you must have known intellectually that you weren't unique. I grew up in a club where Willie Miller never played for another team. Alex McLeish never played for another team.
It's not
Puyol unique. At Barcelona. But when you mention those names and there are others, you go, oh, yeah, he was special. Oh, yeah, and he was special too. Special. You know, there aren't many of you around.
No.
You can't have been utterly shocked at the difference in people who don't care apart from the check.
Well, you said that you used the word limp.
Yeah, I meant it.
And it was. It was just kind of, I just saw the last half an hour of that game. Yeah, they just kind of, I've never seen somebody give up the ghost kind of in the way that those players did that day. Mm. And that kind of hurt me. Because there's been two times when I've retired from football where I wanted to go and play again. That day against Manchester United was one of them.
I think I can guess the other one.
And then
cup final?
And the cup final the year after I retired was the other one. You know, so that kind of hurt because I'd spent a lot of time trying to get to Wembley with Southampton. We did in the Zenith Data Systems Cup, not quite the same. So missing out on an FA Cup final by a year was, that kind of made me cry that day.
Both of these things, I don't mean too personal, by your face, they both live with you today. You know, I mean, neither of those emotions have gone.
No, there are certain things that I talk about in my career which were so emotional that when I do talk about them now, I still feel things, and they kind of those emotions come back, and it's still not nice to talk about it.
Southampton are a Premier League club and full of
finally they
are just. I think if we owe you anything, we owe you a move on to sunnier climes before we finish. they bloody hell, they're good at scouting and picking managers. And let me run through a couple of options about who you want to share your views upon. Mauricio Pochettino, gift from God, brought from Espanyol. At the time, a troubling departure for an apparently very talented and apparently good coach.
Yep.
And Mauricio Pochettino does well at Southampton and goes to the club you supported in the first place. Or, question B, Gareth Bale. Extraordinary athlete.
Yep.
Very, very good at your club. Taught well at your club, goes to the club that you supported as a kid and is now a double European champion.
Mm.
Matthew Letizia, your specialist subjects are Maurizio Pochettino and Gareth Bale.
I think Maurizio obviously came in and it was very tough for him because, you know, Nigel Adkins was sacked as Southampton manager. He was a very popular
and I can understand
guy
why.
With the Southampton fans. You know, he just got us promoted two seasons on the spin.
Mm-hmm.
So he'd taken us back-to-back promotions from League One. We were 2-0 down at Stamford Bridge. We'd just come back in the second half, drew 2-2, and lying about 14th or 15th in the Premier League table in our first season back in, which, you know, was pretty creditable at that stage.
And financially very lucrative too.
So, yeah. So it was a huge surprise when Nigel got sacked.
Do my eyes deceive me, but given not just your ties to the club, but your analytical brain, was it not quite simple to see the system on the pitch? I thought you could really see how he was trying to make them play and the degree to which his players, whether they were with him for a long time or not, applied a system that was quite definable, I thought.
I thought so as well. You know, I was as shocked as anybody. But then kind of given that the way that our chairman was at that point, it probably shouldn't have shocked me. But having said that, so Maurizio come in, he's under a bit of pressure straight away because the manager previous was so popular. You know, this decision was made. I think he came in his first game. I think it was against Everton, his first game. We drew 0-0 at home.
Mm-hmm.
and it was kind of a and then, but you, even in that Everton game, you could see that the difference in the style of play that he'd gone to as opposed to what Nigel was doing, and it took the players a few games to get used to it. Once they did, oh boy, you did start to see the difference, and it did do a fantastic job for us. I think we finished 8th the full season that he was in charge for. As a Southampton fan, seeing us back at, you know, not just back in the Premier League, but back in the top half of the Premier League was superb. And he was getting a real good tune out of some good footballers who kind of flourished under him as well.
And Spurs, you can see a development, I think, not just in Spurs, but probably even in Maurizio as a manager now. And although, for my personal taste, it feels as if they might have added another more guaranteed scorer, whether it was a Matt Letizia type or not. Their experience of last season and how they played and their mentality, the successful side of it, the positive mentality, seems more of a plus right now than the way in which they kind of faltered and fell and did a Devon Loch at the end.
Yeah.
It's a very positive environment, and he seems to have thrived on last season's experience too.
I think so. They've a pretty good start to this season, which I think perhaps some people probably didn't think Spurs would be as strong this year, I think a lot of people were the same. I wouldn't have probably said that Spurs would be up there in the top two again, top two or three this season. So for him to have come back, and as you say, he's learning all the time as a manager. And I think the only reservation that kind of you look at now, yes, Spurs kind of ran out of steam a little bit that last few games of last season. Southampton did the same.
Okay.
The full season that he was in charge.
Okay.
You know, we kind of did the performances towards the back end of the season just did dip a little, and you just wonder if the intensity of their play maybe just at the end of a long season just starts to get to them a little bit. That's the only question mark. But you know, I guess having the squad that he's got, it's only going to get stronger, and the bigger squad, the stronger squad you have, the more you can kind of do that press and carry it through the whole season. I guess it was just unfortunate for them that last day of the season against Newcastle was probably, I'd say, his most embarrassing defeat since he's been in England.
It felt like there was a big hangover from the Chelsea game.
It did, but as an outsider looking in and knowing what the rivalry meant between Spurs and Arsenal, and I could have understood that if it was somebody else in third place that was looking to overtake him on the last day of the season.
Point made.
I could understand that. But that, again, is
back on the same theme.
How many of the players really understood?
Feel the badge, feel the history.
What that meant, dropping below Arsenal that last day of the season.
Gareth Bale is immensely talented, but doesn't have your skill set, so let's not be confused. But can I propose to you that he's slightly underappreciated for a guy who hasn't dominated Spanish and isn't going to go from Southampton to develop as he did at Spurs, which I thought he did hugely.
Eventually.
Yes.
It took him a while to break into.
Yeah, we've had Harry on this podcast, and Harry was blunt about on the training ground when he would say, no, leave him roll around, he'll get up and stop, you know, leave you here and whatever. But it's the same as you say about the end of season at Southampton. You know, people need to learn.
They do, absolutely.
In life and change.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so am I wrong in thinking that he's underappreciated in what he's achieved at Real Madrid?
Is he underappreciated?
We don't do that as Brits.
I know what he's done. I know how good he is.
Yeah, tell me then.
I think having seen him as a 16-year-old come through at Southampton, you kind of realised, especially given the fact we were kind of in the Championship, and you see something like that come through, you kind of know he's not going to be at your football club for very long.
Yeah.
That's the situation we were in at the time. Same happened with Theo. After Gareth, it happened with Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain.
Yeah.
You kind of know when you're in those leagues, you know, even in the Premier League now, you know, it's difficult to keep hold of your players, so we had no chance in the Championship. So having watched him kind of develop, you knew that quite quickly he was going to be snapped up by one of the big boys. It was Spurs, not just with Gareth, but I think with Theo as well, and perhaps with Alex. I've always kind of said that they moved a little bit too early before they were ready to go. Now, the only reason I say that is because it took them a while to get established at their new clubs, and I thought that time might have been better used gaining experience in that division, toughening them up a little bit at a young age in that division, playing proper competitive football. because Theo didn't play a great deal of first team football when he first went to Arsenal. He was just kind of almost a permanent sub for a while there. I thought they could have done a better learning experience in the real world, as I call it, playing in that league. So, but once he'd got established at Spurs, I mean, that season when Spurs were in the Champions League, somebody putting in those performances at a club like that, you've got to be a very special footballer. Not putting myself down here, but at Southampton, if you're a really good player and you kind of stand out a little bit, if you go to a team like a Spurs or an Arsenal or a Man United and you're a player like that and you stand out in a team like that, that marks you out as a little bit different and a little bit special. And what he did eventually, that those two seasons really before he went off to Real Madrid, were just outstanding.
Can you empathise with... I think you're very differently skilled. Because I don't
you
think...
You can run quick for a start.
No, I mean in a positive sense. I think maybe the better way to say it is that you have skills that, as talented as he is, possibly he doesn't. But the way I can draw a line between the two of you, and I mean it, that you part of what you're talking about is the Inter Milan games. Extraordinary.
Yeah.
The degree to which the Spurs team started to look at him and say, well, give the ball to Gareth. Now,
absolutely.
I remember that from an Alan Ball team talk. You give him the ball, give him the ball. Now, that's fine, but you're also giving pressure all the time.
Yeah.
He started to score goals off his other foot. He started to score goals from headers. He started to play as a full centre-forward coming in. You watch the trajectory, and then you look him at Real Madrid, and the cup final comes a lot. Cristiano doesn't fancy him at the moment and says, the club says, for God's sake, say that Cristiano costs more, because that's the psychology, and Gareth's got to handle that without Spanish. And a cup final turns up and he scores in the cup final.
Yeah.
European cup final comes up, you know where I'm going. I can draw a line between your appetite for pressure and responsibility and
absolutely.
His.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think you can also add to that the way that he coped in the Euros in the summer.
That's extraordinary, wasn't it?
I just thought the way he handled himself in the media with all the hopes of a nation kind of almost resting on his shoulders, and yet he looked so relaxed through it all, looked like he was enjoying every second of it, and I thought he was brilliant at it. So he just came out of that tournament with so much credit. And what he's gone on to do has been phenomenal. And I kind of know how good he is, and I watch him, and I know what he's achieved. So I don't view him as being not really valued where he is, because I can see what he's done. But there are,
I guess, what I'm talking about is number one. I think a lot of Brits choose not to go abroad because they're scared of it. Secondly, many that go just simply can't handle the change of culture, change of language, change
absolutely.
Of discipline in life. He has.
Yep.
And beyond that, there's this, I mean, I don't want to call out my own profession, but there's this constant, I get tired of that little old Real Madrid in a minute, Manchester United. Every single month since he's gone away, there's been a story about he'll choose a big club soon in Manchester United. We turned him down in the summer when Ryan Giggs said to him, we want you. No, I'm going to Real Madrid. And I don't feel that across the fan base here and across the media, there's enough recognition of his character, his appetite for pressure, the active choices he's made to go to Real Madrid ahead of Manchester United, no disrespect to them, which again, I'm drawing something of a line.
I think it tells you a lot about him personally that he would do that, because it would have been quite easy for him to have gone on Manchester United.
Giggs?
In this country.
Countryman?
I think he was a big fan of Giggs growing up. As you would be as a Welsh kid, who wouldn't? Who wouldn't?
Slightly.
So that would have been the easiest thing in the world for him to do. But I think you're absolutely right. He showed such great character and such great mental strength to go, no, I'm going to go right to the top, and I'm going out of my comfort zone. You know, I've grown up, and I'm going, and that's the team for me. And fair play to him, he's done brilliant.
And whenever you see him scoring goals in the Champions League or winning trophy, you just see that little Southampton crest just glowing through the Real Madrid shirt. There's a little bit of that.
He was one of us once.
That's Steve Archibald, Barcelona. That's why I chose to live there.
Yeah.
It's the way that... We want to finish now. I don't want to be a mushy finish, but I do want to ask you something about... It felt very much when we were looking at your life and your career and what you've said about it, that, and particularly when you talk in the book about wages, and you're really open, which is very unusual in football. Maybe partially that's inspired you to go into the advice and representation agency that you got with Franny Benali. And I'll bet you $1 million or more that anybody who chooses to take your counsel and be guided by you as a group, I'm quite certain that that their choices will be good. But you're really unusual in being frank about money. And the Southampton question is probably the most asked you ever get. But is it feasible to say that you actively chose happiness in your life? That in quite a lot of situations, you took the time to think about what was the thing that motivated you rather than being guided by an instinct or somebody pushing you? And that you've used the phrase laid back all the time. I think I'm talking to a guy who went, I value being happy over...
Yeah, 100%. And that was kind of one of the things growing up in Guernsey. Just me, I grew up on a council estate in Guernsey. I don't remember going on family holidays abroad, any of that kind of stuff as a kid. But I had one of the happiest childhoods you can imagine. Loved every second of it and didn't need money to be happy. Mm-hmm. And that kind of was one of the reasons. I loved football. I was good at it. The money wasn't anything to do with why I became a footballer. Not a single bit of it. If a footballer was paid less than a plumber, I'd have still been a footballer, mm-hmm. no matter what. And that was kind of what I felt like I was here to do. Mm-hmm. And any decisions that I made were kind of never about money. I earned a good wage, don't get me wrong. I had a very comfortable life.
Oh, although in the days there were plumbers earning more than Southampton players.
Oh, yeah, there probably was at the time. That was not my main motivation. Money wasn't my main motivation. Trophies weren't my main motivation. That's why people kind of didn't get, and they can't understand why I didn't move. Yeah, but you would have earned so much more money, you would have won trophies. That wasn't why I wanted to be a footballer. I wanted to be a footballer because I loved playing football and I loved putting smiles on people's faces, showing them what I could do. And it didn't matter what shirt I had on when I was doing it. I just wanted to be happy in my life and happy in my football, and I could do that. So
that is the podcast equivalent of a swivel and a left foot finish into the top right hand corner of Alex Manninger's net. God has brought you to us on this table, Matthew Letissier. Flipping heck, that was majestic. Thank you.
Cheers, Graham. Thanks, mate.
There you go. The Big Interview is produced by Backpage and by me, Graham Hunter. Thanks as always to Beer Jacket for the music. Please don't only keep up to date with everything that we're doing at grahamhunter.tv, but sign up. It's free. There's a little box for your email address, and it means that you won't miss an episode. Never mind all the podcast apps that you've got. I'm Undercast, Overcast, Wombling Free, whatever it might be. Sign up with us, and we send you the podcast every time it comes out. And we tell you about little pieces of news, and we allow you to get your questions to us for the guests as we announce them. There's a newsletter. It'll keep you informed with everything that the Big Interview is doing. We're on Facebook. Look for the Big Interview. We're at GH Podcast on Twitter and Instagram. Please keep in touch. Let us know what you think. We do this for you, not just for ourselves, although, damn it, we do enjoy it. Thanks for being there. Bye.
Ever Googled your own name? Prepare for a shock, because your personal info, including addresses and phone numbers, is out there, especially with the recent hacks at some big phone and healthcare companies. But here's where Aura steps in. Aura scans the dark web for your sensitive information and sends real-time alerts. Aura also actively requests that your information be removed from data broker sites, putting you back in control. Aura provides you with a complete online safety toolkit, credit and transaction monitoring, a secure password manager, a privacy-enhancing VPN, parental controls, and more. Try Aura risk-free with a 14-day trial at aura.com/safety. That's aura.com/safety. Rest easy with Aura. Visit aura.com/safety today.